Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
July 24th, 2015, you're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Barry White.
You wish you were Barry White.
I do wish I was Barry White.
But I know I'm Scott Long, so...
Oh, my dear, lose that brassiere. See, I could pull stuff off like that if I was really Barry White. No, I'm Chris Cosenza, and Scott, you travel as much as Barry White traveled. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm coming to you live today from the spacious Streetsboro, Ohio, KOA campground. And that's campground with a K.
Yes.
If you guys have never stayed here. Everything's here K. If you want coffee, it's coffee with a K.
Jeez.
We're in the camping cabin. It's K-A-M-P-I-N-G-K-A-B-I-N.
Would I sign in as Chris, K-R-I-S, Cosenza, K-O-S-E-N-Z?
I think you might have to. Yes, absolutely. But I'm on the tail end of this trip. Tomorrow I fly home, and then Wednesday I fly out to California again. So such is my life. But I want to apologize to all of our listeners, because normally we like to record the show a day early on Thursday and post it. But I've had terrible internet connection because I've been just kind of hopscotching all over Pennsylvania, New York, and then of course Ohio now. And the internet hasn't always made it to some of these places.
Right. We tried our best to get to everything. During our expansion, but
it's crazy. We need to get Al Gore out here on a road trip and connect these last final dots here. So
gonna see you on the back of a train with a sign.
We'll work for internet access,
right?
Well, a couple notes from this trip. My first visit is really rare when I actually go to a casino for the first time, because there's not too many I haven't been to yet. But this is my first visit to Turning Stone Resort up in Verona, New York, and near Syracuse, and also the Sugar House Casino, which is downtown Philadelphia now. So very nice to see those both gorgeous properties, by the way. If anybody's driving through or close there, check them out. Turning Stone is just an amazing resort. I mean, everything about it was fantastic. I wish we could have stayed more than one night up there. And a good friend, Frank Pody, is the new poker director up there and doing some good stuff. So definitely check that out. And then Sugar House, of course, they're continuing their build out there. So right now the poker is in a temporary tent, which when anybody says that, you always get this like, ugh, what's that mean?
Right.
Especially those of us that played in a tent out at the World Series like 7 years ago,
right?
Where it was not fun. But I've got to say, when I walked in the Sugar House, I was like, this is the nicest tent, if you want to call it, I've ever seen. I mean, you really do not believe you don't think that you're in a tent at all. It's very, very well done inside there, very comfortable. And definitely a good place to play until, once they finish that next building and move into their permanent home. But right now, it's fantastic and very convenient to Philadelphia, one of my favorite towns to go to. I mean, we actually walk there from downtown. So
wow.
So check that out. And then I stopped at a couple other properties along the way that I've been to. But we got new managers at Hollywood Penn National, which is near Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, where I started this trip. And that's home of one of our Ante Up MPD nominees for our most popular dealer contest. They're very excited for Emily up there. And we'll get that vote going here. Oh, next week we'll start that. So they're very excited. And then I also popped my head back in again at Harris, Philadelphia for like the third or fourth time I've been there now. And Dave Slovic has taken over there now, and he just started his first tournament series. You know, such a competitive market there, right, with Sugar House now and Parks and Atlantic City not too far away and Delaware Casinos, right? And they've been kind of up and down throughout. And so he just started a tournament series. I was there the first day. It was the largest tournament field they've had outside of the World Series Poker Circuit event.
Wow.
To kick off their series. I haven't had a chance to check in with them since then because, again, you know, I don't have internet. But I suspect the rest of the series did just quite as well. So he was very happy about that. So, you know, if you've given up on Harris Philadelphia in the past, which was previously called Harris Chester, I definitely think you should check it out again because new management there and doing stuff. So that's been my trip.
Excellent. Sounds like, you know, it's just things are looking up there. And that was a reopening of a room, too, wasn't it, Harris?
Yeah, I think they called it a reopening. I don't think the room ever actually closed. It was more of a, hey, remember us kind of thing. Oh, okay. But it sounds better to say reopening because then if people say, oh, hey, that room was closed, I guess we got to check it out. Victim marketing.
But, oh, that's cool.
But the place was actually packed and just streaming with people. They actually wasn't – it was one of those pleasant problems to have. Wasn't expecting that tournament feel, but actually able – to manage it well, got everybody in. I think he said no alternate waited more than a couple minutes to get in. So everybody that wanted to play the tournament got in. So they found a way to accommodate everyone. But
cool. Very cool.
Very, very good to see. It's always nice to get out of the car and walk into a poker room and see every table packed.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen very often. And there's been quite a few visits I've made to poker rooms where I walked in and I'm the only person there. That's quite the difference. So definitely check out Harris Philadelphia and give Sugar House a check out. Go up to New York and see Turning Stone. And hopefully we'll be doing some Annie Up stuff at most of these properties coming up soon.
Cool.
All right, well, while I was traveling, Media Rex Sports and Entertainment, which is the parent company of Global Poker Index, announced that it raised $4.9 million from investors towards making Alex Dreyfus' goal of, quote-unquote, sportifying poker reality by launching the Global Poker League, and the league aims to launch in 2016 in the United States and Europe, with plans to expand from there on out. So I don't know if we've talked about this in the past, have we? Because I know he's had this idea for a while. And he did the Global Poker Masters, I think, last year, which sounded like it was very successful. Didn't get a lot of traction here in the States. And I know when he spoke at the Poker TDA Summit, he admitted that and learned from his mistakes, like he always does. But now this Global Poker League is expected to be kind of just like a normal sports league. They're going to have owners of teams and players and, I assume, transactions. And they're going to play poker all over the United States and Europe.
It's exciting. They've tried stuff like this in the past with not just GPI, but other or the Global Poker League. But they've tried it with other things too. And it's I remember there was the PPL that they wanted to launch.
Right.
Remember that? That was a long time ago. They never got off the ground. And Kenneth James was going to be part of that, and he actually sent me like a shirt that said PPL on it, and I thought, well, it's a collector's item because it never actually got off the ground. So I have it like sitting in my closet, but. It sounds so like natural. It sounds like something that could work. You know what I mean? Where it sounds like, who's your, you know, they have the fantasy thing that they do.
Right.
You know, and in the World Series and all that stuff, they do the fantasy picks and all that kind of stuff during the big events. And it sounds like something like this would work. I think it needs somebody who's organized like an Alex Dreyfus behind it and the money and stuff. Once they get some momentum, it might actually be pretty cool.
Yeah, I think the key to this was the money, and he's really worked hard to get these investors all over the world, China and other places that kind of are buying into this vision. Because that's really the thing. It's really tough, I think. We see this in sports everywhere. A league trying to get off the ground, grassroots. You know, how many football leagues have we seen? Anybody else besides me go to a UFL game a couple years ago? And it's really tough to get it off the ground because it takes so much money to start it and takes so much money to start until you actually get to that point where you can continue. You know, it's not like Andy Up where we are able to start pretty much with money that we shook out of our couch cushions and grew it there slowly. And, you know, things like this, you know, if it gets bad publicity right off the bat, you can't, do it. A good product right away. So he's doing it right. So whether it takes off, we'll see. I don't know. But we'd love to. And, you know, I'm a big fan of all these kind of, and not this is a minor league, but I love all these leagues and following them and, you know, seeing the team names and logos and things. So I'm very excited to see it in poker if it actually works out. So
I wonder if there's going to be like our version of a Mel Kiper out there. And they're doing a draft, and like,
absolutely.
All right, well, in the stud eight positions, we have Chris Kostenzis ranked 796th in the world in stud eight, but he might get drafted. He's, you know, you never know. There's some talent out there. You never know. That would be hilarious. Because, you know, you got they size up the linebackers, and they size up the quarterbacks, and they size up the cornerbacks. And they do that in poker, you know. All right, well, the stud eight players are over here. We got on the top of it again. You know, that would be hilarious.
Yeah, and you know, the good thing he's got going behind him is they just launched their brand new production facilities in New York, and I think they also have one in Europe, and really working hard on broadcasting of poker events now, and not just events, but actual poker shows. So it's almost like an ESPN of poker now, is what they're trying to create now, so you can tune in at any time and see, you know, results from around the country or something like that. So if you have that, and then you've got the league to watch, so I think it all comes down to how the league play is. But because it's just like any other sport, right? You want to, you know, follow your team and who you're cheering for, and you're right. You know, you do this. I mean, look at the draft now. The draft, the NFL draft, used to be a thing that you would read about the next day in the paper, right?
Right.
And now it's this huge 4-day television extravaganza.
I know it.
And so yeah, so once you create something like that, the rest of it, fans take a liking to it. So yeah, there's absolutely potential to do what you're talking about there if there are viewers from the beginning.
That would just be so cool. Everybody's dressing up like their favorite poker player, you know. You know, at the draft, like I want Antonio Vespondiari. I'm not wearing shoes, you know. So
you know, the great thing too is the commissioner would be like, you know, with the third pick, the Florida Flops draft, Chris Cazenzo from Pinellas Park, Florida, and you come out and they have a hoodie with your name on it.
Hoodie with my name on it. Oh man, that's awesome. That's awesome.
All right, this next story, I've had this on the file for quite a while because we've had a lot of news over the summer, obviously, with the World Series going on. But I thought this was pretty funny when I uncovered this. The Washington Post recently ran a fun little quick interview with Pradyush Baduga, I'm guessing. Badiga?
Badiga, maybe, yeah.
I don't know. Everybody knows I can't pronounce names.
That was close. But, I was impressed you got the first name.
Yeah. Well, I don't even know if I got that. I guess we'll find out, right? Yeah. But anyhow... this gentleman's a 26-year-old poker pro living in Colorado now. But as most poker pros do, has a little something interesting in his past. At age 13, he was the Scripps National Spelling Bee champion. And he says the high-pressure world of spelling words has prepared him well for the high-pressure world of playing cards, and that he was never as nervous in the bee as he sometimes gets facing a big bet at the poker table. So, you know, kind of those where are they now kind of things, right?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody turns on the script spelling bee on ESPN now because it's just funny to watch these kids spell these words that, you know, I couldn't even get the first three letters of most of these words spelled, right? Let alone the next 27. And to see that one of them grew up and is now playing poker, it's pretty cool.
That is cool. And it just doesn't show you that competition breeds competition. You know what I mean? That's one of the reasons why I got into poker was because I had gotten out of bowling. You know what I mean? Is I wanted something else to compete with. And that same thing here. This guy was under pressure to spell correctly, did really well at it, and then he could handle pressure. And so he said, no, I might as well do this other thing. And it's so cool. The thing that I found interesting was that the bet, you know, a big bet makes him more nervous. Now, I would think that the pressure on a kid trying to win the national title would be huge.
Yeah,
but, you know what I mean?
I totally agree. But what the interesting thing he says in the article was that he the reason he answered the question that way is he thinks that he was just too young and I don't really think he said stupid, but naive or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Back then, to even think that it was pressure. I mean, you know, hey, his parents said, hey, go out and spell some words, and it turns out he's good at it. He went up there and spelled words and didn't think about it, right? Now, as you get older, you start to realize consequences if you fail and stuff. And what I think is very interesting about that in terms of poker is, I mean, he's obviously a young gun in poker, 26, right? But I wonder if that's kind of the reason that poker is really being dominated by these younger people now. They have no fear. They haven't lived long enough to fear anything, right? So
yeah.
If you have no fear at the no limit table, you probably are going to be very successful.
That's crazy. You know what I always got a kick out of, too, is that it's always on ESPN, like, because people are like, that's not a sport. And I'm like, yeah, but it's a competition. This is where it gets back to poker.
Yeah,
poker's not a sport, if you think about it, as athletic, but it's a competition. That's the whole point of sports. Sports are competitions, not athletics. It doesn't always have to be athletic. So, yeah, it's always hilarious. And when we worked at the Times, we always had the winner on the Meg and 1A or whatever. And,
right, yeah.
You know, but, yeah, I love the spelling bee. It's hilarious, but it's also unbelievable what these kids can spell.
Yeah, I was on our the Gahanna Middle School East spelling team in eighth grade.
That does not surprise me at all.
You did not see me at the Scripps National Spelling Bee, though. I did not make it out of districts.
And as somebody who edits all of your stories, that does not surprise me either.
No, I know. Isn't it bad? I peaked. My spelling peaked in eighth grade. And ever since I couldn't spell stalagmite, it's been all downhill since then.
All right. We got any updates here. The Annie Up World Championship will be July 27th to August 10th, right around the corner, at Thunder Valley Casino Resort, just north of Sacramento, California. The schedule features 20 events in a number of disciplines, culminating with the $1,650 buy-in main event, the winner of which will appear on the cover of Annie Up. All the information can be found at AnnieUpMagazine.com/World Championship. And just announced, Thunder Valley will be giving Annie Up's 2015 Player of the Year 5 nights in a suite and a $250 resort credit to be used at the 2016 Annie Up World Championship.
That's a pretty nice prize because this is a pretty great resort to be at, and those rooms go pretty high during peak time. So a suite is just fantastic. So, yeah, I got the call from Ben Irwin, the great director of poker operations there last night, and hopefully we're going to be adding some other prizes this year as well too. But that's a pretty good incentive to get out there and play at our Annie Up Poker Tour events and win some points.
That's just huge. Also, don't forget that we've migrated our Annie Up group discussions to PokerRadius.com. It's a great poker networking site, and basic memberships are free and get you access to Annie Up forums, and upgraded memberships will get you access to discounts on poker products and automatic entries to contests. Now, I had some fun this week because I knew that you doing this show, you know, on Saturday with me was going to create a stir.
Right.
And sure enough, Friday night, you know,
I tried to spell it by tweeting, too, but apparently not everybody's on Twitter yet, which I actually am glad because I'm not either. But anyhow, go ahead.
I had my family over on Friday. We spent the whole day with them and everything, and I said, I got into my bedroom and grabbed my iPad, and I'm like, all right, get prepared to be barraged by a freaking all these messages saying the streak is over. And sure enough, we're like, what's going on? I just realized it's Friday and the show's not posted. Is the streak over? And everybody's going crazy. And so I wrote on PokerRadius.com on our recaps forum. I said, it is with much regret, after 10 years of never missing a week, that the Annie Up PokerCast has to record on Saturday. Ha ha, you suckers. You thought we weren't going to do a show this week. Not a chance. Scott's got no internet this week, and but I think we've done this quite a few times in the past, right?
Yeah, the funny thing is, I got a text from one of our favorite pilots out there. I think it was Friday too, saying, "Hey, streak over," and I'm like, "Come on!" And then I think he called a loose translation of the rules or something like that. I'm like, come on, we've done this all the time. We've, you know, recorded on Friday, Saturday, sometimes recorded a couple days early. I mean, this isn't new for us.
I know. But if it was Sunday and you woke up and there was nothing in the queue,
that would probably be a first, right?
Then then you got to worry.
Well, no, that's not true. We've done ones where we got off the cruise and you had uploaded
right,
on us.
Right, and I said, we prefaced it earlier in the week saying, look, we did a show during the week. It's still intact. We just have to post it on a Sunday and all was forgiven. But the year, it's only Saturday. Of course, you know, while we're talking, I haven't really posted it yet, so something could happen. I might not be able to post till Sunday. Then we'll really look crazy stupid. But no, the streak's still alive.
The other funny thing I think about this too is how many of our listeners actually don't think the streak is still alive, because they all, a lot of them, you know, called BS on us when we did
the five recap
last summer, right? So. So I guess it's heartwarming that there's still a number of them out there that do think the streak is still going live, because I still think it is.
I know you do. All right. Each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emails us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. It comes from our favorite guy, Vic G., your favorite chip collector. He says, my favorite part of your show has always been Hand of the Week, where you discuss decisions during a poker hand. But there are plenty of decisions to be made before the dealer pitches you your first card. Chris plays a lot of cash games, and Scott plays in unfamiliar poker rooms across the United States. Many of us play at our local poker rooms and make the occasional trip to Vegas to play with people we've never met. I think our pre-game decisions can be just as important, and would like to hear your take on this topic. Some things I consider. Which poker room should I play at? Should I play shorthanded or wait for a full table? And how much should I buy in for? And which seat should I choose? Those are some of the topics. He sent a pretty lengthy email about it, but those are pretty much the highlights of decision making.
Yeah, one of the things I like when I see an email from Vic is I know it's going to be pretty detailed, and he puts a lot of thought into what he sends us. And obviously, we couldn't read the entire email because the show has to be continued next week. But so we're trying to summarize it a little bit. But before we even get into any of this, I would say, I mean, I think this is right. I think too many players just wake up one day and go, "Hey, I'm going to play poker and go wherever they want to go and take whatever seat that they're taking." And play whatever game is available. And if you're playing for fun, that's perfectly acceptable. But if you're playing to, you know, improve yourself or make money, I think these things they bring up are absolutely stuff you should consider.
Sure. No doubt about it. I tend to be sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? I just take...
Obtuse?
Yeah, I'm obtuse. What the opportunity...
O-B-T-U-S-E. Obtuse.
Can I have the origin of the word, please? It comes from the Latin obtusius. No, but I tend to be a equal opportunity player. If I'm close to a poker room and I want to play poker, I go to the closest one. I don't, you know what I mean? But if I'm in Vegas, you know, and I'm making a special trip to a place, I'll be like, all right, well, I know where there's a soft game because I've played it here every time I've come out, or I hear there's a soft game here, or, oh, they're going to play a 3-6, you know, mixed game there. You know, so my wherever my favorite game is, I'll go. But if all things being equal, I just go to the closest one, if it's all things being equal. And then when you get in there, obviously there's breaking down of more things, like he talked about how what kind of table you should play at, what you should put your money in for, that kind of thing, so...
Yeah, I guess what I'll say on that is the poker room you should play at is the one that you're most comfortable in.
Yeah.
You know, I think we talk a lot on the show about, you know, chasing promotions or, you know, where somebody says this is a soft game or this or that. At the end of the day, that stuff is all, you know, meaningless, I think, if you're not comfortable when you sit down and play. Because you're not going to play your best game if you're not comfortable. So I think you're better off being at a room that probably has fewer promotions or fewer things like that, or where you just feel comfortable and you're going to play a confident game, then, you know, I love it when I hear players say, well, I have to play there because it's $500 a high hand every half hour. And I'm like, okay, that's great, but if you are spazzed out because it's so different from you and the players are aggressive and you can't play with them, then is that really worth trying to win that $500? I don't think so.
No, absolutely, because you're just not going to play optimally, and the odds of winning that high hand are so rare that the return on investment, if you're going to lose the table, is not good, you know. But, you know, like I remember some of the stuff he said in the email, too, was like comfortable seats, they have comfortable seats, that kind of thing, and I've never given that any consideration, to be honest.
Seats are pretty big. It's one of the things I do talk to poker managers when I go around, and especially when they open a new room or they redo a room. The first thing I do when I get the room and I'm talking to them is I sit my ass down in their chair.
Yeah.
And usually it's a really good chair because I don't like to lie to folks. But, you know, and if it's a really uncomfortable chair, I just sit down and continue on my conversation. But if it's a really good chair, which they usually are, then I'm like, man, this is important. Because, I mean, you're sitting there for, you know, if you're playing any kind of real session, you're playing at least 4 hours.
Right.
And a longer session, you're playing 6 or 8. And that comfort of that chair makes a big deal on how long you're going to stay there.
Well, let me ask you this. This is something that this, now it's getting interesting to me now.
Now it's getting the whole rest of the show has been boring, but now we found a way to get Chris interested.
Well, but at what level do you hold that chair? I mean, in other words, okay, you've got two poker rooms to go to. One has got a plush, unbelievably reclining chair, but the games are tough. Or one is, you know, it's like a electric chair. You don't want to sit in it. But it's got an unbelievably easy, soft game that you love to play. Like, let's say it's right. Omaha well, 8 and it's 8-16.
The beginning of this is that, you know, at the end of the day, wherever you're most comfortable is where you should be playing. So if you're more comfortable playing that soft game on that hard chair, then that's where you should be.
Right.
If you're more comfortable playing the harder game in a cushy plush chair, that's where you should be. I can't answer that question for players. They can only answer that for themselves. But what I would say from the operator standpoint, you know, good chairs are very expensive. I mean, some of these rooms I've gone to, that they spent $400 or $500 per chair for a player. I mean, not even just the dealer chairs or the other stuff. And that's really expensive. You're talking, you know,
fine 10 a table.
Yeah. At a table in a 20-table room. I mean, that's a considerable expense. But the managers that have gone through it say, you know, hey, I understand. If that chair is comfortable, it is going to keep people in that chair longer. And the longer the people are in that chair, the more rake I'm going to get. And that's an investment that pays off for me. Whereas you'll go to other places and they're like, oh, yeah, you know, whatever, you know, we got these chairs from Chairs R Us. You know, they're on discount sale. And they think they save money, but they probably cost themselves money in the long run. So I think it's more of an operator thing, I guess, is where I'm coming from. As a player, I mean, you can decide whether you like the chair or not. Because the other thing, too, is, you know, some people don't like a big plush chair. I mean, you know, I'm traveling with my wife now, and we've been in 6 hotels on this trip, I think. And a couple of them have had really hard beds, and I just bitch about it all day the next day. And she's like, no, I like the hard bed. And I'm like, so, you know, it's a personal preference, right? Yeah. So can't make everybody happy. So, but we're talking about what decisions you as an individual make going. So,
I think it's funny how we used comfort 2 different ways there. I mean, we used
Comfort for your ass, I mean, and comfort for your head. Define it, you know.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I mean, if your comfortable ass is comfortable, then that's physically comfortable. But if your head is not comfortable because you're in a tough game, so you got to weigh everything. I would much rather be comfortable in my head, knowing I'm going to take money for home, and go lay in my bed when I get home, be comfortable, and say, ah, right. I got $600,000 in my pocket, but, you know, oh, I was comfortable at the table, but I got my ass beat, and now I'm trying to find my mortgage.
Yeah, that's perfectly acceptable. That's, you know, that's just the difference in each player.
Yeah,
so
yeah, absolutely. So it's a lot to consider, a lot of things to consider before you you go into a room and sit down and play.
Yeah, the one thing I'll say before we move on is the shorthanded thing has always given me the red ass. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've been at poker rooms and we're getting a game started, and it's maybe sometimes a game that they don't always offer, not a popular game. Obviously, the stuff that we like to play, you know, maybe there's a stud game or something like that that we got 4 or 5 people that want to play it, but. And then we sit down at the table and there's always a couple people there that are, I'm not playing shorthanded.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, you understand if we don't start this game, it's probably never going to get started. So why don't you take a hit for the team here, Gramps, and, you know, play a couple hands shorthanded, and we'll get this game going. So there's that. But then I also understand why – I get why some people walk in and don't want to play a shorthanded game the entire time of the day. It's a different skill set, right?
Right.
But I think as poker players, we need to be able to – we need to put ourselves in uncomfortable situations from time to time so we become a better player overall. And the shorthanded thing is always something that's driven me crazy because most games are not going to be shorthanded for terribly long. You know, like I said again, once you get the game going, then people say, oh, the game's going now. I'll play. I'll commit now.
Yeah.
Or other people are walking by. I'm like, oh, hey, they got a stud 8 game going? They never get a stud 8 game going. I got to play now. And eventually that table is going to fill up. So, yeah, so maybe you play a little tight right away because you don't want to play shorthanded. But generally, most rooms are going to cut that rake. I mean, I've played in some rooms where they haven't taken any rake on a shorthanded. So at that point, what are you losing, really?
Yeah. I couldn't agree more with you on that. I mean, it drives me crazy when you're sitting at a table with 5, 6 guys. And they're like, well, just get it started, you know? And then if they have to ask for the rake, you know, we reduce our rake on the ship when it's down to 5 or 6 handed or whatever. I mean, that's what you do. You help them out, but they're helping you out, and you're helping each other out. And plus, the people who are there, they want to play. So play. You know what I mean? Play. That's why you're there. If you can't handle playing with 2 fewer people or whatever, then what's wrong with you? You know, yeah. I mean, just give me a break. Play.
I mean, yeah, again, we're not asking you to play all night shorthanded. So,
right. I mean,
45 minutes in or an hour in, we're not getting players, and you want to get up and leave, fine. But,
yeah.
You know. Got to get it started, folks.
And then the other stuff, too, just real quick, how much should I buy in for? I think that's again, personal preference, but you do have to think about it. He's right. You have to think about these things. And then if you have a choice of a seat, you should choose the seat that makes you more. Like, I love to be across from the dealer. Yeah. I love to be, like, if I could be, I'd love to be, like, in the 4, the 5, the 6, those seats. Those are my favorite seats because the board's right in front of me. Everyone is in my peripheral vision, basically. I hate when I'm in, like, 1 or 10. Because then I got to look around the dealer to the other guy, and then everybody's there's people that are far away from you, and I hate being like 2 and 9 because then you're the full length of the table away from people, and I love being like 4, 5, and 6, like right there. That's my favorite.
Yeah, so. I mean, I guess the other thing I'll say on that too is, I mean, this is one of the things that I think really separates that fine line between good players and great players. You come to the poker room and there's a list, right? Mm. You know, how many poker players are going to go over to the bar and get a beer or sit down and watch TV or something or get on their phone? And I have no doubt that Vic G is walking around that poker room looking at every table. If he's there to play 2-5, looking at every 2-5 game and watching those players. And then, you know, when they call his name and there's two open seats there, he knows which of those two is going to be best for him because he's been watching the game.
Right, exactly. If that guy's aggressive, he's going to want him on his right, you know, that kind of thing. And
absolutely. Makes a big difference.
Yeah, so
especially in a no-limit game. Yeah.
Absolutely right. So a lot of stuff to consider. I'm glad he brought that up. It's something that, you know, sometimes, you know, you don't think about it because you're in the game for so long. It's just natural to you. But a lot of people maybe just don't think about those things. So that's cool.
Yeah.
All right, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com and we'll have Snow Kwame, Casino Director of Poker, Elliot Schechter, tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is PokerRadius.com, poker's best social networking site and home of the Antiup Group discussions. Comes from our friend, Dr. Frank. Says, in a no-limit hold'em tournament in a Florida card room, the dealer has properly burned a card and dealt the turn. Quite quickly, there was a bet and two callers. Action on the turn was complete. Just as quickly, the dealer, mistakenly believing the hand had already that he had already dealt the river, put the stub into the muck. Instead of dropping the stub on top of the muck, which would have been an easily retrievable error, he used his thumb to lift a few cards off the top of the muck and slid the stub in between. He immediately recognized his error and began lifting some of the muck off the stub in an attempt to identify the stub. He believed he could identify at least the top part of the stub and even started to cut off the cards that he thought were muck, but then he thought better of it and replaced them on top of the stub slash muck and called the floor. The floor felt that the stub cards were probably pretty much squared up and the muck cards on top and underneath of this supposed stub were rotated in various directions. The floor removed the jumbled cards, presumably pure muck cards, and picked up about two-thirds of the squared cards and instructed a dealer to shuffle this smaller supposed stub and burn and deal the river. No one objected, and the tournament went on. But later, several players questioned the floor's decision as arbitrary. What do you think? Should the hand have been backed out and the chips returned? Probably not. Should the dealer have been instructed to shuffle this pseudo-stub or just deal a burn and river from the top? If the dealer is shuffling this stub and cutting it, why does he need a burn card? And I think that we've said stub way too many times.
It's a lot of stubs.
We have to have a moratorium on stubs from now on.
From now on, he's not Dr. Frank, he's Dr.
Dr. Stub.
Elliot says, I don't feel that this decision was arbitrary, but rather was reactive to the situation presented to the tournament supervisor. Since this hand should definitely be played to its completion, the need for the river card to be a live, unused card from the stub of the deck rather than a dead discard from the muck is a most important concern at this point in time. Shuffling the remainder of the stub here is a decent security measure that would prevent the dealer or supervisor from having any chance at all at predetermining which card may become the river, which is also the reason for burning a card in this specific instance.
Yeah, I agree. You have to always burn no matter what because otherwise it would be chaos.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's just the rule of it, and there's a rule for a reason. And if somebody,
well, I guess the other thing too is, what harm is it to burn, right? You know, regardless of whether. I mean, I kind of get what Frank is saying. Hey, we've gone through all this effort to shuffle on this, and we'd really need to burn now. But you know, as soon as you don't burn, then you've got three people like, oh, he didn't burn.
Yeah, there's our card, and destiny.
If for no other reason, that's why I would do it. Is just to keep those people from saying that.
Well, plus, you know, the original reason that you burn is because if the cards were marked, there's still a river to come, there's still a river to bet on, the guy would see that his card was the card he doesn't need is burnt, you know what I mean? Or he said, oh, it's less likely that this card's out because I marked that card and I saw the ace go by if somebody's right. Cheating, you know, which doesn't happen hardly anymore, but if it does, that's the whole point of it, is that you burn that card so he doesn't know that card's coming when he finally, you know what I mean, or whatever. But I mean, yeah, it's just a rule that you have to have, so you have to do it. But wow, that sounds like it was a nightmare.
Yep.
Hey, we got a brand new O'Malley's Move.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a friendly $1-$2 PLO8 home game. Most people are just here to have a good time, and while there are a couple of extremely solid players, there are a few players that are new to Omaha. The max buy-in here is 100, and it's early in the night. Most players still have their initial starting stack, and we are no exception. The table is seven-handed. The blinds post, under the gun folds, the plus one folds, and the MP makes it $6 to go, a standard raise. It's folded to us on the button, and we look down at the ace of clubs, queen of hearts, five of spades, tray of clubs. Since it's still early in the night and we're fairly new to this home game, we decide to keep the pot small and call. The MP has claimed to be familiar with Omaha 8, but other than that, we really have no information to go off on this guy. He's won one pot, but it didn't go to showdown and wasn't really a monster. He has us out-chipped by $10. It's folded to the big blind, who calls, and we all see a flop with $19 in the pot. It comes down the ace of diamonds, queen of spades, five of clubs. Interesting flop. We hit three pair, although obviously we can only play two of them. The big blind mucks instantly. That must have been a complete miss. But the MP makes it $12 to go. He raised preflop, so maybe that's the case ace and gives him top set, but I want to see how this hand plays out. We make the call. With about $40 in the pot, the turn is the three of spades. And once again, our opponent makes a bet, this time $25. So, we've got eight outs to fill up, but most of those are not nut outs. Are we good here? What's the move?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is One Hand at a Time, home of poker instructional videos online. Anti Up listeners save $30 by registering at onehandatatime.com/antiup. And this is a very quick situation, Chris, coming from our good friend Vinny.
Okay.
All right. He says he's playing in a one-table, $175 satellite at the World Series of Poker.
Cool.
It's a winner-take-all satellite. Four players are left. Blinds just went up to 150, 300, and everyone has around 3,000 in chips.
Okay.
I have only 650 in total in the big blind, and the cutoff raises to 700. Do I call with deuce of hearts, four of hearts?
Ooh. All right, so we only have deuce of hearts, four hearts. We only have 650, and basically we've committed everything if we go in with it. And are we like in the are we in the blinds after that? Do we know anything else about it, or?
Let's see. Well, we're in the big blind. So after that, we got the small blind coming up for 150.
Okay, we only have 650 left after that, already in the middle. That money's in there.
650 total, yes. We're already in for 300. So we got 350 behind.
Oh, wow. Then we have to put another 150 in the next hand anyway, which brings us down to 400, which would be nothing. And oof. Wow, this is a situation, really.
See, it's a quick one, but it's a hard one.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, you're alive. I mean, you're probably going to be live with those cards. The problem is, though, is that any overpair that's in one of those, you know, if anybody has anything like sixes or eights or something, you're screwed. But maybe I would get it all in here, you know. I don't know. You're the short stack ninja. The blinds are pretty high for what we have, though. So, you know, I mean, yeah, if you get through one more, you'll have 400 for a couple of hands around. But basically, you're just going to get it all in with 400 in a minute anyway. Jeez, I don't know. Yeah, I guess so. I guess I'll put it in here.
Yeah, without even thinking, I'm putting it in here.
Yeah.
I mean, and this is the kind of thing. It's funny when I had a good back and forth with Vinny about this because, you know, I got the short stack ninja name, right? I also am very clear that I suck at math.
Yeah.
But for some reason, in these sit and goes, math is just easy for me. I don't know what it is. But so this is kind of what I told him here is that when we're this short now, you have to start thinking about not about what hands you can win with, but what hands you can win chips with.
Mm.
So in this scenario, we're being asked to commit our last 350 units in 1450. So even with deuce of hearts, four of hearts, I cannot believe that we're more than a 4-to-1 dog, and that's what we're getting on our return here, right? And if you win that hand, we're back in contention, and if you lose, you know, you really didn't have much chance to win this tournament anyhow. Because you're right. If you fold here, you're going to have, 350 left, right? And 150 is going to be in the small blind.
Yeah, I'm still kind of confused then. Was it 650 that we had left behind, or was it 650 we had in total with the money in and...
650 we had total, and 300 had already committed to Big Blind.
Oh, okay, yeah, so I was wrong with the math before. So, yeah, I'm definitely getting it all in. I was thinking there was still 400 left after...
No,
I'm getting it all in. Yeah, I'm sorry. I had the math wrong. Because it's a situation, I didn't write it down. I'm just listening to you. So, yeah, I definitely would have just gotten it all in there.
Yeah, because if you think about it, so if you fold here and... the next hand,
you have to play it.
I would say if it folds around to you, right, you have to complete. You'd be risking 150 to win 600, which is also 4-1, but for 2.5 fewer times chips than this hand before, right?
Right.
So it's going to be the same odds with the same situation, but if you win the second hand, you've got 600. You win this hand, you have 1450.
Plus, you don't even know if they're all going to fold around to you either. You know what I mean?
Well, that's true too. Yeah. So you have them up. Right. Exactly.
Are they, I mean, if somebody had a pair of fives, though, you are a bigger dog than 4-1, right?
Right. But, I mean, I guess in general, in thinking of all the different hands that we're having, this is a sit-and-go, right? Right. So, I mean, but remember, we also have, I mean, obviously fives would be devastating because that takes away two of our straight cards. But, you know, we do have a hand that has straight and flush possibilities here as well, too. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this isn't 7-deuce offsuit, but even with 7-deuce offsuit, I'm probably going to make this call. I mean, this hand has a little bit more potential than that. You know, and then, like I said, you know, if you win 600 on the next hand, you know, you're still not a factor in this tournament. You're still going to be in a shove and get lucky scenario at that point. So, which is fine. I do that all the time. That's part of the short stack thing is, you know, you wait for the right situation, push it in. And even if I win, then I got to wait for another situation, put it right in. But when I'm faced with the situation he's talking about here, I think I got it. It's a no-brainer to me to put it in at that point and try to get enough chips that I can fight with a little bit. You know, again, 1450, we still have half as many chips as it sounds like most other people have. But 1450 can do some damage to one of these other players with 3,000.
Right,
you
know, now
you get into the next hand.
Right, now you're stacked some serious power. Yep.
Double through them, now you're back at 3,000 and they're in your spot, right? And then you're well on your way to being competitive in this tournament because now you've got just as many chips as the other chip leader.
Right, exactly.
So that's kind of what I'm looking for here.
Yeah, I think it's a natural shove. Now, I was getting the math wrong in my head because I did it in my head rather than writing it down. That's what I deserve for not doing it. But no, you're absolutely right. I would have gotten it in there. And that's a dangerous hand, really. And it sounds funny, but it really is. Deuce four suited. It's pretty dangerous. You could flop two pair. You can make a straight. You know, if they don't have a pair, all you got to do is flop any pair. You know what I mean?
The cards are probably live if they don't have a pair.
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier. Yeah, definitely live.
If they have a deuce or four in their hand. So, I mean, that's one random person. So, you know, I did clarify in because the way you worded it, I wasn't sure whether that meant that he had 650 behind after the 300 big blind, which I think is what you were thinking initially, right?
Right.
And I think that's an interesting discussion as well, too, there. At that point, now I'm probably folding.
Right.
Because now I got to put another 650 into this hand against one player that's been aggressive. I think I'd rather wait and the next hand put my 150 in and still have 500 behind to play with.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was saying. I was thinking it was 550 you had and then 150 would be 400. My math was way off on that when I was listening to it. So now I'm glad we clarified that. So, yeah, I would call with that probably every time. Not call or shove or whatever you want to call it, but I would definitely get it in with that. Interesting.
This is kind of what I was talking about, why I love sit-and-goes, because the math, for some reason, makes it – math is so much easier for me in these sit-and-goes. And I think at this point in these kind of sit-and-goes, math does take over, and the cards are largely irrelevant at this point. You know, you just got to figure out, you know, how best to get the most chips to compete. And that comes down to situations rather than cards. Obviously, if you get aces or something, you know, all bets are off. But the rest of the time, it's really just – picking your spots and when to shove, when to call, and knowing that what the return on it is. And it's much easier, I guess, for me. Maybe it is for everyone. I think it probably is to do the math when you're talking three or four people left in a sit and go than it is with 1,200 players left in a multi-table tournament. Right. You know, it's so much different at that point. I mean, now it's easy. You can kind of actually do the calculations when it comes to you rather than have to put a lot of, you know, squishy math in, which is what I kind of call it. And these other things that folks say, you know, I play with math, and I'm like, yeah, well, that gets back to the binary bunch thing where those ones and zeros are all based on assumptions at some point.
Right. All right. Another good hand. I'm Chris Costanza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.